Welcome to the eBook Revolution podcast. I'm Emily Craven, bringing you interviews on writing, publishing, transmedia, book marketing, and the eBook Revolution. The companion website is ebookrevolution.blogspot.com. Enjoy the show. Hi guys, Emily Craven here, and I wanted to thank you very much for joining me in this lovely June 2013. I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of an update on what I've been up to. I haven't done that for a while. So, as I said before, I've taken on a new job at the Queensland Writers Centre in If Book Australia, and we're putting together podcasts and webinars and online courses for that. But in terms of my own personal writing, The Grand Adventures of Madeline Kane and Jake's Page, I've actually signed on with a speakers agency, two speakers agencies, in fact, in Australia, Speakers Inc. and Creative Net. And so I'm looking at going to schools and doing talks about my YA novels. Now I realise that not everyone loves ebooks as much as I do, or really knows how to or what to do with them and how to give them to students. So I've realized that, well, yes, I have them as ebooks, but if I'm going to be doing talks and I want to be able to sell and expand my readership in schools, I actually need to have print copies. So it was really funny to come from that side and think, well, it's not actually a vanity thing. It's a I need it to promote myself sort of a thing. So I've gotten my wonderful designer, Kit Foster, to do the print versions of all my covers. And at the moment, I'm putting together my PDF. And I'm looking at going through Lightning Source to print out a good 10 or 15 copies to take with me when I do my speaking gigs. So that's the major experiment that I've been doing at the moment, because I haven't done print on demand before. So it's exciting, it's new, and hopefully I'll do some podcasts on it soon. I am also doing, if you live in New South Wales in Australia, I'll also be doing an ebook for beginners course at the New South Wales Writers Centre on July 14. So if any of you are interested in ebook for beginners or picking my brain about your specific project, then definitely book into the course and I would be happy to meet you in person. So that's all from me in June 2013, and today we are going to be talking with the wonderful Bruce Corville on creating your own audiobooks. Hi guys, Emily Craven here from the eBook Revolution podcast. Now today I'm really excited about the guest that I have. It's Bruce Corville, the founder of the wonderful Fullcast Audio company. Now Fullcast Audio has a very simple mandate. It's to produce unabridged recordings of children and YA novels using a full cast rather than just a single reader. So whenever possible, they invite the author to serve as the narrator. And their recordings are always unabridged. You know, the only things that are deleted from the text are those, you know, he said, she growled sort of lines, and that are basically made unnecessary because they actually have a full complement of actors who have very different voices. Not only is Bruce the founder of this fantastic company, but he is also an American author of children and YA novels, some fantastic, absolutely fantastic novels. I love them. One that he's known best for is the Into the Land of the Unicorns. Now, today, our podcast, not only do I want to find out more about the audio process, but I would also really love to explore ways that indie authors might be able to do their own too. So thank you so much for joining us, Bruce.
I'm delighted to be here. And that was a perfect statement of Fullcast Audio's mission. Thank you. Well done.
Oh, well, I remember when I first learned about Fullcast Audio, which was through, I followed Tamora Pierce on Facebook, and she said that, you know, her Fullcast Audio of several of her books. And I went, oh, what's that? That sounds pretty interesting. And that's when I sort of found out more about you guys, and I was just intrigued.
Well, Tammy's been one of the best friends that the company has had. Actually, I call her the great enabler. Tammy used to be a radio actress. She was part of a group called Zipper Radio Theater that did some things for public radio here. And we'd been pretty good friends at that point. And when I told her I was thinking about starting a company called Fullcast Audio to do this kind of work, she jumped right in and said, well, we could talk about my Circle of Magic books, and you'd be perfect for Nico. Nico is a wizard that's in those books. And the idea of doing that character, who is probably my favorite character of all the ones I've portrayed in the over 100 audiobooks we've done, was just a delicious thought. So Tammy helped prod me into things. I sometimes tell her it was half her fault that I'm doing this.
So you get all of the responsibility and she just gets the fun of doing the narrating.
Exactly!
Oh, well, you know, I'm very
one
excited.
One side effect of this is that Tammy came up from New York to where we live in Syracuse because we record in Syracuse. It's about 250 miles upstate New York. People don't realize how big New York State is. And she and her husband came up here so often, and she wanted to get out of the city, that they began to feel very comfortable here. So she bought the house across the street from my office. She bought it from me, actually. And Tammy and I, we have a two-person writer's group, and every day that we're both home, about 5:30 in the evening, I trot over to her place, and we read our works in progress to each other. So that's been a very nice side effect of this audio work we've done together.
I'm very envious of both of you. I'd love to be in a writer's group with you and with Tammy. That would just be, like, ultimate dream. I do want to talk a little bit about your books as well, but I did want to ask first, why do you produce audio versions of books? What are the benefits to producing an audio version of a book?
Well, there's numerous benefits. One, I just actually love the process. I love gathering a group of people who are gifted readers, most of whom are good friends or will become good friends, and having them, when we rehearse, gather on the table and read to me. And then I love, I don't always direct because of, we produce sometimes so much and I can't always be in the studio because I have other responsibilities. But I love being on my feet as the director and coaxing performances out of people to mold their voices together to make this what we think of as a symphonic thing almost, where we're building an orchestra of voices that play off each other and build together, really enhance the emotional content of a book. I fell in love with audiobooks almost 20 years ago now when I was making a cross-country trip with my daughter. And it was just the two of us. I said, let's get in the car, point it west, we'll drive till we run into the ocean, then turn around, drive back, and see what we can see. I set aside 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks for this, and I knew it was going to be in a car, like a moving metal box with a 14-year-old girl, meaning effectively a crazy person, for all this time. And so we got several audiobooks to listen to, and we fell in love with the form. And then through a series of circumstances, I had a chance to produce myself. And I love theater. I love performing, but I'm never in town long enough because of my travel schedule to be in a play. And all of our actors love doing this because it's like doing a play, but you rehearse for 1, 2, 3 nights, we get up on our feet and we do it in the studio, and it's done, and you have this permanent record of this performance that you've created together. And I can tell you that being in the studio doing it, scenes that are intense on the page become 2 or 3 times as intense when you're working together. And I do think that audio brings a new level of emotional intensity, especially when you can work together as we do. The full cast format allows people to go to a higher emotional level then it actually makes sense artistically, aesthetically, in a single voice format. The full cast, when you're doing just one character in that full cast environment, you can go as far as that character allows you to in his or her emotional range. So it lets us really stretch what an audiobook can do emotionally.
Yeah, and I've as I said, I've listened to several of the full cast audio discs, and I've also listened to traditional audiobooks as well, and I much prefer the full cast audio because it helps give voice to the characters that I would read, and they'd always be in my voice in my head, and I always knew that wasn't right, and it was fantastic because in Australia we drive really long distances, and I just did a 3-day drive to move interstate. And I had the Will of the Empress audiobook, and we just listened to that for days. It was
all
fantastic.
14 hours of it. Yes, that was one of the most daunting audio challenges we've made. To get an entire class together for 14 hours of recording is a big task, but I love the way that book came out. You know, Tammy says, that's one of Tammy's books for people who don't know, she has said that when we cast the way we do, that for her it's like walking on the street and meeting one of her characters. If you match the voice to the character, authors usually love this format because it is like having their stories come to life. And unlike a movie that will adapt and change and often really mess up.
And cost millions, yep.
And cost millions. not that these don't cost us to make, but they don't cost millions, God knows. But we honor the work of the author. We are trying to create exactly what the author had in his or her mind. Which is why, whenever possible, we have the author in to do the narration, because then there is a consultant, too, and they can say, no, that's not what that character sounds like. Or the actor can turn to them and say, What is he or she feeling here at this point? And the author, whether it's Tammy or somebody else, can give us an explanation of what that character is going through at that moment. So the actor can bring it to life in a way that's really true to what the author had in mind.
The thing that I love about, because that is a benefit that you have over movies, the fact that it is exactly as the way that you read it, so that you don't lose any of what you love from the story. And then the other benefit is that a lot of people are very busy with their hands and they need something to occupy their mind, and that's sort of, you know, it's something that an audio book fills the gap with.
Well, they are, as you mentioned, perfect for driving, and that was how I fell in love with them. I can't just sit and listen myself, even though I make these and love them. I have to be doing something with my hands, too. Whether it's driving, I know a lot of people who do needlework or gardening or even just when they're doing housework or when they're walking and they have their headphones with them. They listen to them while they're doing something else. And they're a great way to make time pass when you're stuck in a car. One of the things that's important about our format, and you hinted at this in the beginning, sometimes people think they don't like full cast books because they've heard what is done by the BBC, where they do adaptations of books. But the adaptations are like what movies do. They take the book and turn it into a script, and it's not what the author wrote. And sometimes it's hard to follow because they try to do it all with conversation and not with narrative. We use the text the author wrote. So in radio theater, as it's sometimes called, the idea is to tell the whole story through dialogue and sound effects and get rid of the narrator. We have the narrator as the most important person in the cast. We consider the narrator's voice the pudding into which all the plums are embedded. So the narrator holds the story together, and that's why you get the entire story as the author meant it.
Okay, because I was wondering how it differed from radio theater.
Yeah, well, in radio theater, instead of the narrator saying the telephone rang, you just have the bell of the telephone, and that can work all right. But when you try to eliminate all the information about who's speaking, well, I think the extreme example is the Beeps production of The Hobbit, which they did with a full cast, but they did it radio theater style. And I love The Hobbit, and I know the book very well. I've read it numerous times, but I was totally lost listening to the opening scene because you have 14 dwarves and Bilbo all talking with no attribution, no help to understand what's going on. And I found it completely chaotic, and it was like a madhouse. I couldn't make any sense of it. And there's not, you don't have the clues, the guidance that the narrator offers you. You know, if the Beeb does, let's say if they did the old Curiosity Shop, they did a Dickens novel, it would probably be done in 6 hours over the course of this adaptation. If we did the whole thing with a full cast, and I would have loved to have done Dickens sometimes, it would probably be 24 hours because we use everything the author wrote.
And I suppose that's the fantastic thing about having a whole cast as well, is that, you know, when you have one person reading, as you said before, you don't get the full emotional range, but also you don't get the different characterization that can come from different sounding voices.
Yes. And not only that, you know, many radio theater groups will have people record in isolation and then they mesh things together afterwards. But as much as possible, we like to have people in the studio together, and they play off each other. So you have the emotions build because one character plays off another, and they respond appropriately to each other, which doesn't always happen when you're doing radio theater in isolation.
It would be very difficult to organize that.
Oh, it's like planning a war. We spend a huge amount of time scheduling. And there's always some things that you have to just compromise on and say to somebody, you know, for people who read just 2 or 3 lines, we don't make them come in and hang out for 3 hours to do that. We'll take them what we call wild and let them come to the studio and just fill their lines in. But for the important scenes where people are interacting, we always try to have the characters together in the studio.
Not only do you run full cast audio, but you are a wonderful YA and children's author yourself. Can you
Why, thank you.
Well, it's true. It's very true. If anyone hasn't heard of Bruce, they should definitely go and check out his stuff. Could you give us a little bit of a background on your years in publishing and why you chose to get into the audiobook scene?
Well, I've been publishing for some years now. Actually, my first book was published in 1978. I knew from the time I was 17 I wanted to be a writer. I knew from the time I was 19 that it was going to be children's books. I'd always been interested in kids' books, and I subscribed to the Peter Pan idea that there was no point in growing up. I was having more fun than any adult I could see. When I was 19, I was going out with a young lady who lived around the corner from me. Now, we lived way out in the country, so around the corner doesn't mean like a near neighbor. She was about a quarter or a half mile away. There's, you know, a mile on each side of the block. And her mother gave me a copy of Winnie the Pooh to read. Now, I had not read Winnie the Pooh when I was a kid because I tried and I thought it was silly. I take my fantasy very seriously. In Alice in Wonderland, Alice falls through a rabbit hole. She's in Wonderland. Makes sense. In Narnia, you go through the wardrobe. You're in another world. Makes sense. In Winnie the Pooh, Christopher Robin's coming downstairs with a bear, and then 2 pages later, he's in the 100-acre wood. And he didn't get there anyway, and I thought it didn't make any sense. I didn't like it when I was 8. But I was 19. I was old enough to get it. And one of the things I loved about that book was there's a perfect marriage of text and illustration. It flows almost cinematically. And the young lady I was going out with, who is now my wife of 43 years, is a brilliant illustrator. I said, we can do this. We can work together and make kids' books. And a mere 8 years later, we finally sold our first kids' book. And then we were off and running. We've collaborated, that is, she's done the art for about 24 of my books. I've published 101 books now in all. I love writing for kids. I was a teacher for 7 years, which was like my graduate work on how to write for kids. I always knew that I wanted to work with kids. And doing stories for young readers is just the joy of my life. I'm a very lucky guy.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit envious, but I'm only young. I'll get there eventually too. So how did you then get into audiobooks?
As I mentioned, I fell in love with the form when I was making this cross-country trip with my daughter. And I thought, gosh, I wish some of my books were on audio. And a couple of years later, I was at one of the big book events that are held in the States. You know, there's American Library Association and the American Book Sellers Association. I can't remember which one of these it was. But I walked past the recorded books booth, and I thought, I should talk to them and see if they'd do some of my books. And I wasn't as old and bold as I am now, so it took me 3 or 4 passes walking back and forth from them. But I finally stopped and said, you know, you should have some of my books. And they asked who I was, and I gave them a sort of sense of the stuff I've done. And they said, yeah, you're right, we should have some of your books. And that was all it took. And they signed a contract to do 2 of my books. Now, I wanted to record one of them because I performed the first 2 chapters as part of my school speeches. And they were leery about having an author record, but they said, well, you can come in and audition. I said, you know, and it's just an audition. I really want the best book possible. So I auditioned, and they said, well, we don't think so. Now, they have a house style. You may have noticed that I speak fairly rapidly. I've been trying to slow down for this. As I am slowed down by my director when I'm at the mic. And their house style is very, very slow, very measured, pace. So I thought, okay, well, you'll record this. So I got the 2 recordings. One of them I really loved. I thought it was fabulous. But the other one I really disliked. It was so slow. I found it very draggy. I thought, okay, well, I perform a lot. I have some background in theater. Someday I'll make an audiobook of my own because I have this long list of things I'll do someday. Well, a couple of years go by, and Tim Ditlow of Listening Library, and Tim was Mr. Children's Audio for a long time in the States till he finally abandoned us to go on to print publishing, the devil. Tim contacted me and wanted to buy the rights to a couple of my books. And I wrote back and said, no, I think I'm going to record these myself. And he wrote back and said, what, are you crazy? And I wrote back and said, sure, everybody knows I'm crazy. But that began a conversation. And in the way of all true collaborations, Tim is convinced it was my idea, and I'm convinced it was his idea, but somehow between us, we came up with the thought of doing books recorded with a full cast rather than a single reader. And I said we could do that in Syracuse, where I live. And Tim wasn't sure about this idea at first because he had what I call the bi-coastal talent prejudice, which is the idea that all talent is based in either New York City or Los Angeles. But there's talented actors everywhere. Often they don't have a chance to exercise their craft enough. And I had several pools of actors drawn here in Syracuse, the local talent pool, the Syracuse University Drama Department, which is world-class, and kids, because one of the things we do that makes us unique is use kids as kids, and there's talented kids everywhere. So we formed a side company to Listening Library called Word Steak Wing Fantasy Audio to do 4 recordings a year of children's fantasies. And we built over a period of years until we did, which was our magnum opus. We recorded Philip Pullman's The Golden Compass, which a lot of people think is one of the greatest audiobooks ever made. And I can say that without feeling like I'm bragging too much because I was a co-producer, but I did not direct. It was directed in the UK by Garrick Hagen. And shortly after that, and I love this work, I found the first time I got in front of people to direct an audiobook, it felt natural to me. I felt at home. I felt like I was doing what I was meant to do. Everything that I love, children's literature, reading aloud, performance, communal work, directing people, all came together in this form. So after 5 years of this, Tim called me one day to tell me that he was selling his company to Random House. And I knew at that moment that our days were numbered, that Random House would look at how much it cost to make a full cast recording and say, why should we do that? Which is pretty much what they said. And 2 years went by and some interesting circumstances, and I was in a position to start my own company because all I wanted to do wasn't so much that I wanted to have a company, but I wanted to keep making audiobooks because I loved producing and directing and bringing books to life in this format.
That's fantastic, and you guys do such a wonderful job.
Thank you. I'm very, very proud of the work we've done.
Can you tell me a little bit about what qualities are needed to do a good audiobook presentation?
Well, you need to be a fluent reader, first and foremost. And it's interesting because there are some very fine actors who are not fluent readers. I learned this to my grief early on when I cast one of the best actresses in this city in a major role in a book. And she came in. I'd seen her on stage a number of times. I knew she was a very good actress. And she couldn't read. Now, I don't mean she was illiterate, but I mean she could not read a single sentence without stumbling. And if she read the same sentence 3 times in a row, she would stumble in a different place each time. So it would have been impossible to record her. I brought her in for a private session. Finally, she looked at me and said, this isn't working, is it? And I said, no. And she graciously bowed out. But you have to have the ability to read fluently. You know, whether you're doing a solo reading or whether you're the group of other people, because you'll hold them all up, you're going to stumble, of course. There's going to be errors. And we spend about 4 hours in the studio for every hour of audio that you actually hear. But you have to be fairly fluent. And you have to be fast on your feet. We don't have time to do, you know, we don't do 4 weeks of rehearsal as you would do for a stage production. You can't slowly work your way into the character. You have to hit the ground running. And you have to be able to accept direction. When we bring in stage directors, they have a hard time because they're not used to giving line readings. But an audio director has to be able to say, this is what I want, give the line, and have the actor mimic the line. We don't want to trample the actor's creativity, but the director has something they're trying to get from the actor. You have to have fluidity to be able to adjust on the spot. Now, if you're doing a single voice reading, you need, of course, to be very fluent in the range of voices that you can do. And there's a range of ranges. That is, there is everything from what's called unvoiced, where you pretty much read in your own voice all the way through, to fully voiced when you do something like Jim Dale does with the Harry Potter books, where he created over, I think, 200 different voices to do. Where it was all the way from up here to down here. And you let your voice flow from place to place. But again, you have to be fluid and adjustable. You also have to have clear articulation. Modern speech is often quite slurry. People are lazy and hazy in the way they speak. And I am, if I'm not careful, most people in America are, if they're not careful. And you have to have not high tone speech, not sort of the high British style, but you have to have clarity of articulation. One of our best readers, an actress named Cynthia Bishop, is interesting because she was raised in Egypt in a British school there, and well, I think it was a British school. She does not have a British accent, but she has a level of articulation that makes it sound like a high level of speech. And she caresses, she virtually makes love to language. But you have to have that love of language and a fluidity of voice.
So you were talking there about having multiple characters as to in comparison to having one person like the man you were talking about who was reading Harry Potter who changes his voice. Does the story text change from the physical book to the spoken recording? So with full cast audio, you probably would remove he said, she said, but if it was one narrator, would you keep it in?
If it's one narrator, you don't cut anything. The trick there is you drop your voice slightly for the attributives. Attributives are the little phrases that attribute the sentence to a speaker. The he said, the she said, the Martha growled, the Harry snapped. So it might be read like this. I can't believe you said that, Martha snapped. And you make this very clear distinction between the dialogue and the narrator's insertion of the dialogue tag, the attributive.
Oh, that's a very good example. And as part, do you pick the people in your full cast audio so that their voices are so different that you don't have to do those attribution tags?
Yes, and that's one of the trickiest things, especially with kids, especially with young girls. When girls are between, oh, let's say 8 and 12, their voices tend to be very much alike, and we always look for very distinct voices. So a girl who has sometimes a more husky voice or something that distinguishes the voice, we're always looking for that unique voice so that it does not blend in with other speakers. As people age, their voices tend to become more distinct. But when we're working with kids, this is really an issue that we have to be very careful of.
Because I know full cast audio uses things like little special effects like reverbs to indicate that someone is thinking to themselves. What other tricks of the trade do you use to indicate those sorts of things that would be in italics or bold or whatever in the text?
Well, the reverb is the most obvious one. We don't use sound effects. We do use, we have the guy who runs the studio where we work is also a genius, and I mean genius composer. He can work in any mode. He was a rocker for a long time, but he's also conservatory trained, and he can write everything from 15th century Chinese tuvan singing to rockabilly to rock to classic Broadway to opera. His dad was an opera singer. So we do use music in a couple of ways. One, he will underscore. Now, we use it very sparingly. It's like salting the stew. You don't want to dump the salt shaker in. You just sprinkle some in. But we use it to introduce chapters and come out of chapters, to set an emotional tone. And especially leaving chapters, depending where you are, especially toward the end of the book, he'll bring in the underscoring, and it can enhance the emotional impact. I went into the studio once to talk about the scoring we were doing for one of my books. I think it was Juliet Dove, Queen of Love. Now, I know how the book ends, and I had read that narration at the end. But he played me the underscoring, which came in about maybe a half page or less before the end of the book. And it did so much to enhance what was going on emotionally at that moment. I actually felt tears come to my eyes because he had captured so thoroughly the feeling for the story. And the other thing we do is often writers will throw in a few lines or sometimes an entire song that they've written the lyrics. And in most books, the narrator will fake a singing thing for it, but we will write the music for it. Todd Hoban, that's his name, will score that song. We did a book by Gail Carson Levine called Fairest. It's an 8-hour recording set in a kingdom where the dominant mode of communication is singing. That is, people don't have conversations. They sing to each other, like Gretchen Steve in opera. And that book has about 3 hours of original music in it. All the dialogue is sung. There's many scored songs where people speak in rhyme as if they were lyrics for a song. But even in conversation, they're singing back and forth. And Todd scored that whole thing. We're the only people who could have recorded that particular book and done it justice.
That's fantastic, because I've read Ferris and I really enjoyed reading it, and I hadn't even imagined what it would sound like.
It is probably our grandest achievement, because what Todd directed that too, and what he got out of those performers, and the way the music works in that book is unlike any other audiobook in the world.
So with underscoring, how long do the underscores sort of run for?
Usually not more than 20 or 30 seconds, and that is on the long side. It's interesting how long underscoring will sound as you're coming into a chapter. So it's very brief for the most part, which is one of the things that makes it tricky because you've got to set that mood in only a few bars of music.
It's almost like having a feeling for movie soundtracking in a way.
Very much like.
Would you ever do a book that had, like, why do you choose not to put sound effects in?
They're redundant for the most part, partly because we do not cut text. There was, when I started the company, a divide between unabridged and abridged audiobooks. Abridgments are where you take an eight-hour story and cut out all kinds of stuff. It's like the Reader's Digest condensed version of book. They make me twitch, just the very thought of them. So we're purist about that. We do unabridged, except, again, for cutting those attributes, the he said, she said. If the line is, he said, putting down his glass, it's not cut. If the line is, he said, moving to the window, if there's an action attached, it's never cut. We just cut the he said, she said kind of thing. But that means if you're not abridging, then almost all sound effects are redundant. I actually just listened to a recording that Listening Library, to name neighbors and name names, had done of the first book, an old book of the Hardy Boys series. And they went all out with that. They did the sound effects. And in some cases, it made me twitch. They literally did. And then the phone rang, and you're bing, and it's like being told the same thing twice. And because they were doing it on a bridge, they had to have the text in, but then you hear it too, and it becomes unnecessary. So we don't use those things. It's a purity of form.
And as soon as you start cutting into the text, that's when you start moving towards radio theatre.
Exactly.
Now, I will admit that I had a very selfish reason for asking you on the interview, and that was when I first came across Full Cast Audio, I couldn't help thinking about my own book, which is based in Facebook and has a whole cast of characters that butt into each other in status updates and comments and basically having a conversation but on the page. And it made me curious as to how you get around those formatting or visual aids in audio. Because, for example, I'd set it up to read like a Facebook page. So, you know, you might have a blog post where it would read like a normal prose book, but then at the end you'll have all of these people cutting in on comments. And it made me wonder, how would you tackle making people understand that
those
something
are the kind of things
is a private message, something else is a comment? Like,
those are the kind of things we lose sleep over. And one way you can handle that is you create a kind of an oral, A-U-R-A-L, an oral code, so that you do a certain ping that means this is a Facebook message coming in, and another trill that means this is a private IM, and another bong that means this is a private posting or an open posting. So you kind of give people keys or cues to how things are going. That takes a while to get into it. A book like you're describing takes a great deal of thought in order to produce an audio in a way that makes sense of it.
Because this podcast has a very large indie author listening, and so I know that a lot of people would be thinking, well, I can't afford to get somebody to produce my audiobook for me, and so I've talked to a couple of authors who have already been telling me that they're trying to figure out how they would go about doing it and what was the best way.
Let me give you one place to look, and that is, are you familiar with audible.com?
Certainly am.
Okay. Are you familiar with audible.com's ACX program?
I've heard of it.
Well, just, you know, you can search for it. ACX is a program where they're helping to enable independent authors to get productions made at a reasonable cost. They will try to hook you up with producers and actors. They're not necessarily people who are, like, running top-notch studios, but people who have talent. You audition them. You can either pay them up front, or you can set up a royalty split if they're willing to do it. To have them produce the audio version of your thing. So have you and your friend should check out Audible ACX.
Awesome. I think that was a question that I was going to ask you anyway. When you, because I know in some of the books that you guys had, I hear you guys use trills and to indicate certain things. Do you explain what they are at the start of the audio, or is that considered a little bit crass?
We don't do that. We want you to be able. We want to make it clear, but we also want to let you know. We respect the intelligence of the listener. Our job is to make it clear enough that the intelligent listener can figure it out, and then the listener has to contribute too by paying attention.
Well, at least it makes it a little bit more, I suppose, I was about to say a bit more challenging, and I prefer things to not be just zone out material.
Yes, exactly.
So what are your thoughts on serializing, podcasting is a way that people do this, of serializing a novel as opposed to producing the full audio of a book?
Well, it's something I've thought about numerous times. We haven't done that. I think it is hard to build an audience for something like that. It depends on how many followers you have, how you build followers. If you're doing something like that, you need to spend a lot of time and energy on promotion, on getting it out there. And this is one of the interesting aspects and one of the challenges of being an indie author is how much of your time and energy are split between creating your work, doing the writing and or the audio production, and how much time is spent on trying to get people to be aware of it. And you have to make a choice about how you devote your energy, how you split your energy between those things. And that's going to take a lot of effort and luck, frankly. You know, there's Raymond Feist, a very successful fantasy author in the States. He's probably not the first to have said it, but I know he repeated like a mantra over and over again. It's better to be lucky than good. It's good to be good, too, but luck is a huge part of it.
Indeed. You know, I've been trying for the end of rainbows for years now, and, you know, one day I'm going to get it. I know I am.
Well, the persistence is a huge part of luck. You know, there is a science of luck, and part of it is being in the right place at the right time. Of course, the more places you are, the more times, the more apt you are to be in the right place at the right time.
Maybe I should just clone myself, and then I can be in all places at all times and just double my chances.
Well, if you figure out how to clone yourself, send me a message quickly. Or both of you send me a message.
Now, you mentioned that ACX was a good place that indie authors could go to look at producing their own audios. Have you heard of any other places that are doing that sort of thing?
Well, there's a place called LibriVox, but I'm not sold on it, to be honest. LibriVox, I'm not sure if it would work for indie authors. It is like Project Gutenberg for print. I don't know if you know Project Gutenberg. It's where mm-hmm. people are trying to put all the public domain books of the world into this database. I love Project Gutenberg. LibriVox does the same thing with audio. But what you might find in LibriVox is that a book that's in the public domain, a classic title, let's take The Wind in the Willows. People read chapters in, and you might have 15 different narrators reading the book. So you can download the entire book for free, but you have this variety of narrators, sounds, and qualities. It is a place I think you can post your own book. I'm not sure, but LibriVox is something to look into. I don't know of any situations other than that.
It sounds like a good opportunity to set up a website that allows people to, I suppose, similar to the ebook stores, allows people to upload their own audio to sell.
Yeah, if you want to do that amount of technical work, I don't.
So, if you were an indie author, how would you tackle organizing your own audiobook?
Wow. You're asking me to do something that I don't do at all. I'm not an indie.
Well, when you first went to do your first audiobook, how did you go about tackling it? When you recorded your first book, what did you have to think about?
Okay. Let's make it clear that when I did that, I was working with a book that was published by a mainstream publisher. It was one of my books, and I was working with an existing audiobook company. So have that in mind. But the first thing I had to do was find the studio. And I went to – there's studios in every city.
Because it's important to have good quality equipment.
Yes. Now, equipment has improved. And many people have home studios now. But just as you plug a microphone into your laptop, does not mean you have good quality audio. You need to have, you actually need to spend it. You want to do it yourself. You need to learn to do it. You need to learn how to build your studio so that the sound quality is correct. That involves soundproofing, worrying about extraneous sounds coming in. People don't want to hear, when they listen to a story, your kids yelling, your dog barking, the car zooming by outside. All that distracts from the story. You want to get rid of that. You don't want to hear a lot of the narrator's personal sounds. You don't want to hear their stomach rumble. You don't want to hear their lips smacking. We spend a lot of time editing out the smacks of lips, the extraneous sounds. As I told you, we spend 4 hours in the studio for every hour that you actually hear, sometimes 5 hours for every hour that you hear. Every time a plane goes overhead, we have to shut down because you can hear that plane on the audio. Low sounds carry. So you have to be prepared, if you want a professional sounding job, to stop and start and then to spend a lot of time editing afterwards, or you're not going to sound good. You have to be prepared to worry about room sound, if there's a reverberation, if there's the echo bouncing off the hard wall that's too near you. Have you soundproofed? Have you found a way to make the sound deadened but lively at the same time? It is a science. It's not something that you can sit down and do and expect it to sound professional without really doing homework about how to make your studio sound.
So you started off by finding yourself a studio?
Yes, and a very, very good studio with a genius who runs it.
Accents, good or bad, or don't even try?
Only try if you can do them well. We don't do bad accents. Sometimes I'll turn on a book. If I can't cast it, I won't record it.
Now, I'm super conscious of the fact that you have to be somewhere else, so thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. How can people find out more about Fullcast Audio and contacting you?
It's easy. Go to our website, Fullcast Audio, one word, FullcastAudio, fullcastaudio.com. And you can download all our titles from audible.com, too.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time out to have a bit of a chat with us.
A delight to do so, Emily. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope it inspired you. You can get more information on the ebook revolution and author marketing online at ebookrevolution.blogspot.com. See you for the next show. Viva la revolution!